Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, and I'm so delighted to be here. Today is March 1st. I have my co-host with me.
Well, good evening, Dr. Val. You're right. March 1st. Marching first. Before we can get there, we have to march first. And we're there. We're getting there. What a beautiful day. And I feel a newness, something about a new month, but particularly March. March is a month of command. It's a month of let's go forward. And I feel a sense of going forward.
Absolutely. March is a special month. It's my oldest son's birthday month. Yay!
Look at there. Look at there.
One yes, I have a king born this month.
Absolutely.
I'm so excited about the show. It's called Housing Crisis in America. You know, everybody has been stressed out in one way or another. Rather, it's keeping their home, finding a home, the increase of rentals. It is at an all-time high. I don't understand how they think that people can spend almost $3,000 a month for a three-bedroom when they have small children and trying to make ends meet. I have no idea how they think we can survive here in America with those prices.
You know, it's an interesting thing because one school of thought would think with the pandemic going on and things, and maybe there's not a demand on a lot of things, but it looked like it's just the opposite with the housing market. I am watching people, and even myself have dealt with it, where those that are renting, rent has gone up in some cases 50%, 70%, absolutely outlandish.
It's ridiculous. They aren't new houses or new apartments that they're paying this type of money for. It is just, it just saddens me. It really breaks my heart to see the manipulations that some of the homeowners are utilizing for those that are renting their properties. It's robbery.
It is robbery. And particularly here, one of the reports talks about the state of Florida. And particularly, I will tell you, here in Palm Beach County, it is absolutely off the chain. One lady went from paying $1,400 a month to now paying $2,300 a month. Same place, no upgrade, no amenities, but paying that and basically being told, well, the cost, they're passing the cost down to these consumers. Well, somebody forgot to inform those individuals' jobs. Someone forgot to inform, everybody else that plays a part in this. So I understand that it can be remedied very quickly if the governor just would declare a state of emergency, because what it's doing is creating homelessness, is creating working poor population. And so therefore people are living in their cars. You can drive to Walmart, almost any Walmart parking lot any night after 10 o'clock. And what you'll see is people there with sheets and things up to their window, where they're sleeping in their cars and getting up and going to work the next day because they cannot afford to live and be able to live in a place that they desire to, which shines a different light on homelessness. Because we tend to think homelessness is, well, okay, people who's down on the luck, people who didn't have, people who may have a substance abuse problem. No. The new breed of homelessness is people that are going to work every day, and yet it's still they're priced out of the very market. And so they don't have a home. Many of them have gone from surfing from one place to another. And it is a crisis. It is a crisis, unlike 2008, that was a different housing crisis.
Yes,
this housing crisis here is absolutely, it is draining the life out of people who are hardworking, draining the life out of people who have fought to get this dream, and it's just being taken away. It doesn't look like there's any help in sight, but we're going to find some solutions tonight.
Absolutely. I have a special guest, Patricia Sierra Sampson, will be joining us this evening. Patricia.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm fine, and actually already riveted to what you both have been sharing, because obviously in regard to the housing market and how it affects our communities, both the Latin American and the African American communities, yes, we have been truly impacted. And I'm glad that this discussion is happening, because we do need to all be as well informed as possible and to really see that there are options and solutions that we can all embrace.
Now, you're with Keller Williams Realty up there in New York area. And what have you seen or experienced in the market where you're living?
Well, I currently live in the Hudson Valley, but I cover different counties outside of Manhattan. I could cover the city as well, but due to proximity, I cover Orange, Rockland, Westchester County, Sullivan, Ulster, and Dutchess. And these are suburbs of New York City. And so being that New York City is the mecca of where the jobs are located, what we have currently seen in these outer areas is that we're getting this migration of people leaving the city, coming to our areas because of affordable housing. So what has resulted is a complete boom to our housing market, but in some ways detrimental to the local community. Because the people that are coming from the city, they know that the real estate market in the city and the pricing for an apartment, a condo, a home is three or four times what they can, you know, what they pay for what they can pay here and get something much larger, much more luxurious, and pay a fraction of what they're paying in the city. And so we've seen our inventory just get gobbled up. The pandemic hit, the first thing that happened was that bubble that was created by having people leaving the city and buying up properties here in our counties. And for local people, that has meant that it has pushed them out of home buying. And for people that are existing homeowners, they could, you know, on one hand, they say, wow, well, this will raise the value of my home because now, you know, we're getting all this interest. But at the same time, it's changing so many things, taxes, just the overall average per square foot. And so, you know, it's a coin. You have to see both sides of the impact.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the things I will say is this, is that as we're seeing this happen, you're right, and it might look different. It may look different in different states and different areas, but it is the same impact that is seemingly happening because of the fact, you know, you're basically having one sector of people running from one area to another area just to be able to live. But then it totally impacts that those people that was currently living there. Mm-hmm. So whether we're talking about, you know, taxes or property taxes, or we're talking about the brackets, things are happening in the people's quality of life is being impacted on both ends. For one, we got a better deal, but for the others, you know, you change the whole dynamics of our neighborhood, of our community. Those things are happening. And really, where do we run to? Because with the rising prices, we are now seeing rental properties are definitely being more expensive than even than home ownership. But by the same token, everyone can't get a home right now. So we're dealing with everything from having money, you know, having the right credit score, having the things that you need to have. So we really, it's really a crisis. And many people find themselves in a quagmire. What do I do? I'm caught in the middle and there seems to be no relief in sight. And I don't know if, there's any on the horizon. I try to stay in touch with our local, in our county, dealing with home and community development. What can be done? Well, there are times they may have things that are there for renters, you know, but oftentimes those things are designed when people are in trouble. So it's a catch 22. I'm now behind on my rent. I'm up to, so now I'm possibly facing eviction. This is now, I'm afraid it's on my credit report. And now I go through all of that to be able to assess the help that you're offering. And I get help and it's just, it's mind-blowing.
It can be a vicious circle, and the pandemic has really now highlighted there were some pre-existing issues affecting our communities already. Because when you look at, especially relative to the poverty level, 34 million people live in poverty. So when a pandemic happens and it affects all these different areas, employment, housing, health, then you're looking at those challenges, and then it's a trickle effect. So we've seen, you know, this definitely impacting the housing because of the fact that it has resulted in people not being able to pay mortgage, not being able to pay rent. Homelessness has increased. And when you look at the numbers that are most affected are in our communities. 44% of African Americans, of all homeless people, 44% are African Americans, 22% Latinos, the remainder is Asian Americans and whatnot. Yes. And so the numbers are there. And then when you see that people that are living in this poverty level and struggling to make ends meet, 50% of their income already goes towards housing.
Right. So
when the lack of employment due to COVID, the pandemic, that just exacerbates the situation. And so you start seeing the ramifications. But on the flip side, because I don't like to also be all gloom and doom, it has produced, even in this example I just placed about people leaving New York City, very high, of, as you know, everything, housing market completely through the roof. But yet we have challenged inner city communities, and yet they're being pushed out in general. So them looking outside of the city into areas like even our own, I, as a realtor, have seen families that have taken this as an opportunity to make the switch and found it much more affordable to get homes or condos or apartments here in our area. It will mean that the expense then goes up in the commute, obviously.
Right, right.
Because they're still working in the city, because that's where the jobs are. I mean, locally we have jobs, but primarily the jobs are in the city. So I have seen an increase in home ownership among our communities, which I see it as a positive thing. So it really warrants that we open our eyes to what options our communities have and what resources that we can try to promote home ownership.
I agree. And when we look at those type of things there, I think that's where people are really most thirsty. Where do I find this information? Where do I find, what are these alternative sources? Mm-hmm. One of the things that have been running rampant, and I can talk about this area here, is that a lot of our kids go off to college and they return back here in Palm Beach, mm-hmm. and they're not able to mm-hmm. make it on their own. They either have to come back and live with mom and dad, or they have to find a roommate.
Yeah.
So now that's another crisis. The crisis is parents said no.
Right.
The kid, either they're going to come back and stay at home, mm-hmm. and with the goal of hopefully that, I'll save some money and I'll be able to afford it, or people are roommating. And we're seeing that happen.
Yes.
And having a roommate is great if that's what you want to do and desire to do. But there's some time when you're at a certain stage and age in life, you don't want a roommate.
No. Right. Did it, done it.
Exactly. So roommate by demand rather than by desire.
Well, student debt, again, is, and this is something, if you look at it from a national perspective, has affected our communities very drastically, because on one hand, we've seen the numbers for African Americans and Latin Americans increase in regard to education, which is a wonderful thing. But then they are now burdened with debt. And so it creates that cycle where then they have the debt and then now returning home, adding additional pressure to the family, financial pressure. And so it really is something that hopefully we can see that our administration starts to really pass the legislation that we need to rectify this real dilemma we have with student debt and how it's strangling this demographic and these kids basically that are trying to start and make the inroads that are necessary, but yet are strangled with this debt.
Yeah, we see the interconnectedness of all of it. On one hand, go get education, go and do those things, and I go and do it, but you're right. I'm saddled with debt, student loan debt, all of these things here. And then even worse so if we as parents are signing on, co-signing to that debt out again. And so now this is vicious cycle that is going on, and this vicious cycle just continue to trickle down. And you continue to say, what's going to happen? And I'm with you. I think that we have to have legislation. We have to have legislations and regulations. I believe that we have to have legislation that's going to get us out of this. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have regulations to have to keep these things from happening. You know, I mean, there are things that are almost unspoken, ungodly, mm-hmm. as far as, I mean, just with rental properties. I mean, could you imagine in 1 year time that you go up $850?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They said that nationwide, the spikes in evictions due to this particular reason has been 118%.
Yes, that's crazy.
Of the astronomical hikes in these rents. And there have been, because of course the pandemic did produce, the CDC did come out with halting evictions and putting out the standards that we need to adhere during the pandemic for landlords to adhere to. But then, especially in the previous administration, there was all kinds of criteria that was laid out that people that were struggling and needed this type of assistance had to produce all types of validation in order to qualify. And it became such a backlog. It wasn't felt. The relief was not felt in our communities, because we know that our communities were not feeling that relief. And so I think in a very grassroots level, I think what is necessary moving forward for us is that financial literacy is so important.
Right.
Financial literacy is because even when I see the young families that I am working with, that I make it a point, I love working with first-time home buyers, especially from challenged communities outside of my area, and they're looking at our area as more affordable. And I find that if they do the necessary legwork, which is lowering their debt in whichever way is possible, really looking at that, doing the research to find what options are there for their particular situation. Because I talked to people, they didn't even realize, you know, they were vets and there's a VA loan that they could apply with 0% down. There's FHA for people that will say, well, I don't have, you know, enough for a down payment. They want me to give 20%, 10%. And I said, FHA is an option. And then there's government programs that if you just go to your local, regional government website and just Google that, you know, affordable housing in our state, in that particular state, there are programs for first-time homebuyers in order to at least assist in that down payment process. There's a lot of steps along the way. I was dealing with a family. I said, it's not easy and it's probably going to take longer. You already picked your house, but I'll be very blunt and honest. It's probably going to take longer than a year to do all that is required. But if you hang in there and do what is required and don't lose faith, those programs are there. I sometimes think, you know, I think it's purposely complicated because people, you know, fall off and say, oh my gosh, it's too daunting. But if they stick with it, it's there. Money is there.
You know, NACA was a good program that they had mm-hmm. when individuals were struggling yeah. years ago and losing their home. That was a good program that was put in place that President Obama, you know, mm-hmm. put in place for people to keep their homes. You know, my cousin Tina is saying that her rent went up $300. Single parent, how are you going to carve out $300? And then if you can't pay that, then you're forced to try and find somewhere else to live. And then that's even more than where you're living. So mm-hmm. I think that is such a tragedy that, you know, that these people can put that type of burden on families, especially if they know those individuals that have been renting for them have been faithful renters, uh-huh. and then they ran into some complications. And yes, there are resources out. Each city, each state has money allotted to them. You know, Dr. Jane, I talk all the time about you have to know who is in your community, what government officials are there, the mayor, the commissioner. You got to know who's in your area and what resources are there. And when it's time to vote, you vote because of the fact that certain monies are given to certain communities. And guess what? They can get the money in the communities, but if the people don't know that the money's there, it's not used and they lose it. And then when it comes around again, they're not able to get the money for their community because guess what the government says? The White House says, you didn't use the last money that was available to you. We had to take it back because you didn't utilize it. So you have to know what's in your community. And unfortunately, a lot of people are not aware of that. They haven't gotten the memo that there's help out there. And then there's obstacles, especially when you're low income, you feel that, why bother? They're not going to give it to me anyway.
No.
Because a lot of times people don't have the mental capacity to fill out the forms.
Well, that, you know, it really gets down to, and you said the pivotal word, community, because we have our churches, we have our libraries that almost are becoming extinct because nowadays everything's on the phone. No one visits a library. I don't think anyone even owns a library card anymore. They Google everything. But it is a major source of information. And those librarians, that they are educated in research. You become a librarian because you know how to get to information. They're the most valuable resource. If right now you're struggling with trying to figure out what does my community offer, where can I go? And let's say, because it's a reality too, access to the internet, access to a computer, computer literacy. You can go to your local library and talk to your librarian. And just say, these are my objectives. This is what I want to accomplish. I need to get these resources, a list and phone numbers and addresses of where I can go or write. And they will assist you. They will assist you in this. This is very, very important, is this education. And church, as I mentioned, and I would love to see the church also be very proactive in financial and computer literacy. I would love to see that, where on weekends they bring kids in with their parents and have computers, a computer lab for them to come in and work on those computers, even if they're the computers that are available at a school or what have you. Because we need to empower our communities for financial and computer literacy.
I totally agree with you. And one of the things about that is you're so right. Both of you make very good points. We have to know what's happening in our community. You know, everyone gets excited about the presidential election, you know, leader of the country. Mm-hmm. But what we don't understand, the real power that affects us in our hometown is made on the local level and the state level. Exactly. People generally skip those elections or very poor turnout to those elections. They're not knowing that decisions are being made that directly impact them. Yes. And so, as Dr. Val was saying, monies are coming in. You know, we recently had the American Rescue Plan money that came through.
Right.
Every single state and every single county, every single municipality was allotted money based upon census or based upon a lot of things. Now, if you're not at those meetings, you don't even have an opportunity to voice. You don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So how do you have a say-so in how they direct that money? These monies come in. You don't have enough citizens support, a citizen input, and guess thing. Next thing you know, the American Rescue Plan money came in, and all you see is a bunch of new police cruisers, new toys, and things like that. When that could have been going to financial literacy program, it could have been paying for computers to be. I mean, even a partnership with the church, the partnership inside of those things, being able to teach things that is there, and not only that, being able to create what I call micro grants. Those type things there where people can actually apply for them to assist them inside of doing things that will produce something positive for them. And I think that's what's going to have to take because it is without a shadow of doubt. We all see what's happening in the housing market, housing crisis. So we have to go back and look to our elected leaders and began to demand some answers. I said, here in the state of Florida, it could be many other places. Uh-huh. If, a lot of things can be resolved by clearly just declaring a state of emergency as it relates to where we are. When you look at the, as you was talking about the poverty level and how many people are up under it, in the new class of homelessness that is being produced as a result of this, this is a state of emergency. So what is it that we do to not only legislate, but regulate? And those are the two things. We got to do both.
Yeah, it has to be regulated across the board, because if it's not, people that own properties will feel that they can do whatever they can want to do because they have the power to manipulate the people, not realizing that those people could be them within a matter of years or weeks, that they could be on the other side of the fence. So I think there has to be some regulations mandated, and not only for homeowners, but these apartment buildings, these complexes, these Goliaths that just feel that they can do whatever. And then they have, you know, housing for individuals where you there's only apartments that you can get in if you're in housing. And guess what? They will rent to you if you're in housing, because they'll charge $3,000 for property that isn't worth $3,000. But because the government is going to pay that, for that family to get in, then you know they're able to abuse the system, and and it just snowballs. This continually snowballs, and it's out of control. And there has to be some regulations somewhere. And if we don't raise our voice, if we don't stand in the gap and say something about it, then there's going to be a whole herd of people that are going to be parked in cars with sheets up to the windows because they can't afford to eat, pay the light, pay the phone bill, pay the water bill, and pay the astronomical rent that's placed on them.
You know, when we go through crisis like hurricanes and different things, you notice that one of the biggest things that government is concerned about is the word price gouging, right? Price gouging in food and gasoline. Well, what is it that you call this that is happening right now in the midst of this crisis, where you're talking about in cases where people's rent is going up 100% and 70% at one time? That is price gouging. That is price gouging, because guess what? No one has informed the employer you need to increase their to be commensurate with what's going on. So basically, you have now created a problem, and that problem has to be remedied. And I've been doing some talking, and certain, I guess, certain landlords or certain developments, this might be an option for some, where you ask for a longer lease rather than a 12-month
lease. People have done that.
Ask for a 15-month lease or 18-month lease with the hopefully negotiating power to reduce that increase from being so large. Because that is devastating to have that. Most of us, when we budget, we're budgeting based on our income.
Of course. So
these things happen from out of. Could you imagine just buying a car, and then you get your renewal? You know, you're buying a car, then you get your renewal lease notice, and you just went up $400 per month, and there you go. Now you're trying to figure out how I pay for the car and how do I maintain that? That is gouging.
The thing is also that each state, and so I don't want to comment because I'm from New York, you're in Florida, every state is different, and it's also governed, real estate is governed also by the state, Department of State. So there are laws, also real estate laws in place in regard to landlord and renter rights. And each thing has their own. But that's the thing. Every situation is particular to that individual family and that landlord, and how well versed the family is on the laws of real estate, which we normally, when we get, because I used to be a renter before, I remember getting a lease, sometimes signing it, and you know, all that verbiage, did I really read through everything? You know, most people don't really put the seriousness in this transaction that you embark on when you're putting your security, when you're signing for a year, what your rights are. And again, I think if we take this to a community level where this form of literacy is very vital, because in many instances, you are protected as a renter. sometimes in communities where people are more well-versed, it almost works in the reverse, where landlords are up in arms and trying to lobby because the laws protect renters so much for things like you expressed about rent gouging and so forth. So it depends on every state, but it also depends on the particular scenario you find yourself in with the relationship with your landlord. The first thing should be, and again, this could also be at your library where you go in and ask for what department in my local, either it's your local official, whoever handles that particular issue, and be able to get the resources to know what are my rights as a renter, even Googling it, rights for a renter living in blah, blah, blah state and blah, blah, blah city. And you would be surprised there are laws protecting for this sort of thing. But I'm not going to say that there aren't also a million and one ways that people skirt around it and things fall through the cracks. They do. But again, we're challenged because we're in communities where we're not getting served with that level of literacy programs, financial, computer, even tenant landlord relations, which should be top of the list for us to be well versed on what our rights are.
Can I ask a question as it relates to home ownership? Like, say you selling property, mm-hmm. and let's say a home has been seized by the bank, and individuals that own the property are still in the property and the bank has foreclosed on them. What mm-hmm. rights do they have? Because I read a couple of times that squatters wind up having more power than someone mm-hmm. actually owns a property.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to say again, preface that I'm not a lawyer, and basically, like I said, it differs from state to state in regard to laws, in regard to foreclosures and bank relationship, because there's short sales and foreclosures. But the rights belong to, obviously, the owner, because okay. even though the property is under foreclosure, as a realtor, when I see a property under foreclosure and the bank is actually advertising it for sale, they make it quite clear there are people still inhabiting the property. We as realtors can't even go show it. They can go outside and maybe look, drive by, but they can't go inside because technically, even though someone may be not paying their mortgage for God knows how long, they still have rights as the rightful owner. So, but again, that's in New York, in my particular area. I don't know how it is in every state, but the bank is part owner because the ownership still belongs to both the owner and the bank.
And the bank, okay.
And then they have to go through a series of steps before total foreclosure happens. There's a series of steps. And a lot of them are set up because if there's any chance for that owner to somehow work it out to have to maintain the ownership of the house, that's, of course, the best case scenario. And that's why I think I mentioned short sale, because that's something in the process of someone going to foreclosure, before they do that, they do have chances to still be able to recoup or at least try to work something out with the bank.
Okay. And I know that those opportunities are over there because it was about 15 years ago when the market crashed. I went through a series of years trying to get my house modified, and they kept turning me down because I didn't make enough. Then they turned me down because I made too much. Yes. And I'm like, but don't you want me to make money so I can show proof that I can pay for this property? They were like, yeah, but the modification won't work unless you have this amount. It has to be a certain formula. And I think it is just... the system is set up to squeeze people out. And if you're not smart enough or have the right connections, you will lose out and wind up losing your home and also being homeless. So, you know, I do shows like this because I hope that people will be enlightened and not just do anything, that will stand on their feet and say, okay, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep pressing forward because of the fact that there are doors that can be knocked on and someone will open if you knock, but you have to know where to go to knock.
Mm-hmm. Especially for first-time homeowners, there are programs in place that the government has put in place, grants, as we discussed. And even now, there's currently a home mortgage relief program that people have been applying for. It does have requirements based on income.
But what happens if you were working and you're going through the process and then you lose your job?
Right.
What then? I mean, right. It's just a catch-22. It's a vicious cycle because of the conditions that we're living in right now.
Actually, this home relief, a mortgage relief program is designed for people that, let's say, have lost their job and cannot keep up with the mortgage payments, and they're starting to accumulate to a point where they will lose their home. And so, but again, it's all about validation and having a document, the documents necessary to prove, okay, this is my scenario. I can prove that this is my scenario. This is what currently my income. And you go through a series of steps with that. It had become very overburdened because the quantity of people that were applying, there was a cutoff, a deadline. And unfortunately, that deadline has already passed. And now they have almost like a waiting list to be reviewed once they go through that first batch of all the people that have applied to see, because many of them apply, may not qualify for it. And so then it could let in some people that had submitted their application after the fact. But if you, again, Google in your state, mortgage relief program, government mortgage relief program, it will give you all the necessary information. We always go back to that catch-22 about information is key, but how do we get the information people?
Well, that's where I think, going back to your earlier statement, that's where I think that there has to be community hubs. Mm-hmm. There's no greater community hub than the church.
Yes.
You got churches in every neighborhood. And so when we start offering financial literacy classes, when we start offering these type of things, I mean, everybody might not show up in the council meeting or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then these items are not necessarily on the agenda at every council meeting. But could you imagine the hub where financial literacy is being taught? Yes. And perhaps in the midst of that, you generate questions that you mm-hmm. can take to the council meeting.
Exactly.
That you can get answered and you can have the demands that are there because, mm-hmm. The world doesn't stop. So that means there's always a new generation of people coming. There mm-hmm. are people getting married for the first time. There are families that are starting out who needs financial literacy.
Absolutely.
There are people who need financial literacy after divorce. There are people that need mm-hmm. all these things mm-hmm. to be there. So there's always room. There's definitely room mm-hmm. for continuous education about mm-hmm. how things are. What happens when laws change? Mm-hmm. When do we know that they've changed?
Right, exactly.
All those things need to be in place there because of the fact people's lives are affected. At the end mm-hmm. of the day, mm-hmm. we're more than just work. We do live. Mm-hmm. And we need right. a place to live, mm-hmm. to be able to do so. And I think it's so imperative that, perhaps, if we're able to connect some of these links to those
yes.
places, to our own pages,
Yes.
whether it's a community hub, whether it's a church,
yes.
whether,
yes.
these links are there. Frequently asked questions.
Yes.
And
yes.
there you go. Those yes. things there serve as a resource because we need to know. And sometimes it is a little disheartening. It is disheartening when our people are really going through these
yes.
crises and these tough times, and sometimes it's embarrassing because mm-hmm. the first mm-hmm. thing it looks like is like, well, somehow or another, you are irresponsible. And mm-hmm. it's not a matter of irresponsibility
no,
all the time.
No. It happened to anyone.
Exactly. Yeah. In the case right now, mm-hmm. definitely it's not irresponsibility. Mm-hmm. It is the fact that things are going up. Mm-hmm. We're not keeping up with it. Inflation is at its all-time high.
Yes.
And we are stuck in the midst of things that literally, it's going to take less arguing between those that are in government mm-hmm. and more compromise to say, how do we finally serve the constituents, the people that we're supposed to be mm-hmm. here to serve so that they are able to live? Because mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you something. As a parent, you would like to be able to, like anyone, you would like for your kids to exit, you know, exit right, exit right, you know. Right. We don't want to give you a place down in the basement. Oh, right. Here in Florida.
Exactly.
You know,
it seems like you have something personal going on, Dr. J.
Well, hey, I'm putting this out so that nobody comes back, okay? I'm just putting it out right now that none of them, okay, kids, I hope you're watching. No, you know, they don't come back. But I can understand if they had to because of the fact of what's going
on. And that's happening all across the country where you have to, you know, collaborate with family members and friends so that you can make ends meet.
I've had, like I said, clients that has been their course of action. Two families combining their resources so they can purchase a home because in the city, the rents were so sky high that when I did the math, I was like, you can literally pay a mortgage and still have money left over instead of what you're currently both of you paying in the city for something you don't own. So it really is a matter of the education aspect. But I think we can leverage the fact that the one good thing, because I like to see the glass half full, is during the pandemic, we've really see people's good nature and wanting to help come out, okay? We should leverage that because there's people across demographic, job, economics, and they want to do something. People have gotten this now more this approach about wanting to do something to affect others in a positive way. We've seen it, right? So now we can... If the church does embrace this, which I think is a great hub, because from a politics standpoint, when our local politicians see that this is a very strong block of people, the people that go to the local church, and if the church is being more proactive about having programs, they will probably then invite the local representatives to come to the church and speak to the people. And this is an opportunity when it's all said and done for these politicians to get in front of voters. And that's how it should be positioned so that they know, well, you can say no, but then we'll get someone else. Maybe we don't care what party. We should start being more party agnostic because it should be whoever is there for us, that's where we gravitate to. And if you're going to show up and provide us the resources, because they're the ones that will be able to also educate us on what's available, because they're our representatives, they should know.
You're exactly right. And I love the word you used by party agnostic. I think that's the way we're going to have. Listen, if we're going to see things done in this country, if we're going to see relief happen where it needs to, if we're going to see opportunities happen where they need to, we're going to have to start looking at results, not rhetoric. Yes. It's going to have to be results, not rhetoric. Yes.
Holding people accountable.
Yeah, we got to hold people accountable. At the end of the day, you know, I'm like this. Are you loyal to people? You're loyal to party. And then you got to be loyal to people.
Yes, yes, yes. It's whoever is speaking, when we hear it, we know this is something that's going to help. And it's not going to be just words. It's going to be action. If we see action behind the words, you have my vote.
Absolutely.
Patricia, how can individuals connect with you? They're in New York City.
Thank you. If you have any questions, I mean, like I said, I'm not an expert, but I would love to help in whatever way I can lead you down, you know, direct you maybe to a resource. My email is patricia.sampson. That's patricia.sampson at kw.com.
Okay, and you serve where at Keller Williams?
I'm at Keller Williams in Chester, New York, but we cover, like I said, the counties all around outside of New York City. So it's Dutchess, Orange, Rockland, Sullivan County, Westchester County, Rockland County.
Okay, thank you for that. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing that information, and also you have another business or platform that you serve the community as well. And that's one thing I love about you. And actually, we're related indirectly. Our children are married.
Well, that would make you related. Yes.
Our children are married.
Yes. I'm so thankful for that because it brought me to Dr. Val, and I've appreciated her and the work she does. I'm a big admirer, and we need more Dr. Vals and Dr. J's, because this is what's vital in our communities. I started Voice Latina because I felt my community of Latinos, I'm Latina American, and I felt we were underserved. And our, as I was telling Dr. Val, I said, you know, at the end of the day, we live in a country that is governed also by brand value, right? We're surrounded by commerce, surrounded by brands that we can easily recognize. You want to say a reliable car, you think BMW, you know, those are, you think of getting an engagement ring, people think Tiffany. Why? Because of all the branding that they do,
right?
That makes you in your mind equate, oh, Tiffany is luxury, it means quality. BMW equates quality vehicle. We should do that personally, your own personal brand, your brand as a community. We have to equate our brand. And when I, last administration, when they were saying things about Latino people in this country and that we were not contributing, I had information that was actual demographic information, factual information about the trillions of dollars contributed by U.S. Latinos, and that was going below radar. We were being branded as only totally all negative. And so I started Voice Latina to have stories of empowerment, because I knew Latinos from simple walks of life all the way to people that are the movers and shakers of Latino descent. And their stories, you'd never read about them in the newspaper or on Forbes or any of those high profile magazines. So I said, even though my site was created, and like I said, it's a project of just love and passion, but I wanted those stories told. And so if you go to the site and you want to read about empowering Latinos and you want to read about what does it mean to be a U.S. Latino, I wanted people to know, especially non-Latino people, so that they could say, oh, I understand this community a little better.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And what is that website?
It's www.voicelatina.com.
I love your statement about the fact of people looking through the lens of branding themselves. We ought to have a brand, and that brand, definitely we can establish it. You're right. You know, when people think of things like you mentioned, Tiffany's and all the things that come, the imagery that comes. And I think that when we individually, first of all, we individually brand ourselves, and then collectively we brand ourselves. And that is a way of really looking at the fact of, when we value ourselves, we won't take a lot of stuff that we've been taking. When we value ourselves, we will be more proactive inside of pursuing those things that we should. Mm-hmm. When we value ourselves, listen, we can make a difference, because people recognize that you count. You count. And so it is something that we must do. We have to do. We have to find ways of doing it, because of the fact we simply value ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well said, Dr. J. Well said.
And you know what? One of the great things about this platform is we reach globally. Yes. And we provide information globally. You know, racism is learned behavior. And so we're here on this platform saying it's not about that. We have to survive. And the only way we're going to survive is we stick together and put systems in place that will protect us and our children and our children's children. Mm-hmm. Home ownership is being lost. It doesn't matter what racial background you come from. And it doesn't even matter what economical background you come from anymore either, because the rich are getting poor. Before you say some of the rich are getting richer, there are a lot of people who once had money and were living in high-rise apartments and owning property no longer have that, because their money has been blown on, is dissipated as well. So we're all on the same playing field. But one thing we have to do is we have to put people in office that will fight for us and keep fighting for us.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree. And I thank you for this, for having a program like this, because Dr. Val, your story is so inspirational. And the more people hear about it and learn about it, this is what our young people need to do, is to to know that in our communities, there are great stories. There are stories of empowerment, stories of success that they can emulate. And we need to get those stories out because media, it goes underserved. It really does.
Yeah, because you never hear of on the news about programs that are in place to help you keep your home. You never hear them talk about this and say, yeah, you know, you have to go to your local city hall and this is available and that's available. They only tell you about the negative. Oh, right. 1 million people have lost their homes. They never tell you how to keep it.
Yes.
Oh, thousands of people without electricity. Well, you haven't told them what help they have. The California is burning uncontrollably. There's millions of homes that are lost and you never hear.
No.
How are those people recovering after they lost their home? How are they recovering after they've lost everything they've worked hard for? Where are they living? How are they surviving when there's a home shortage that they can't even buy another home because there's a shortage?
Right.
You never hear about the stories about the aftermath.
Absolutely. And that's the problem, that we are a nation of individuals and we have stories and these stories are very important. We're not a headline. We're not a sensationalistic statistic because all we get also a multitude of negative stats about our communities. They don't talk to you about the successes. They don't talk to you about the accomplishments, which we need to, as individuals, tell our children, grandchildren, at schools, anywhere where our community gathers, because the next generation needs to hear these stories because they're the ones that are going to make the difference. Because we right now are on the ground. We are making the difference every day, just with even something like this, having a conversation that others can hear. So applaud both of you for that. But for children to see that yes, our generation, we were also doing the work that's necessary to make change.
Those words resound because of the fact we have to empower. And we empower even through our stories, our triumph. You know,
absolutely, yes.
Though our struggles may be temporary and though they may seem permanent at the moment, we have to understand that's what we said about the last set of crises.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we said about other things that we've overcome.
Exactly.
And so I think that we must move and be proactive. We're moving to an area and a space and time now where we can no longer afford to look at what is. We must look at what can be and what should be. In other words, we can all reflect on the last 2 years of the pandemic, but I do think it's time to start shifting our mind to start thinking about the next 2 years and what the next 2 years will be and what can we produce inside of this. This is probably one of the best times in the world to do something because it's a necessity. It's the mother of all invention. Mm-hmm. And believe me, we have a lot of necessities now. Mm-hmm. So I think there's time to create ways, to invent ways to come together, to invent ways and create ways to leverage things. I do believe that this is a time that will push us to a greater sense of collaboration. Even if the government don't want to collaborate, what happens when we form our own microcosm of what the government should be? Mm-hmm. How can we get together and do so? And I think I heard you mention in some of your clients, you've had to give them advice that it might be better that if you guys continue or you come together and do this in order to produce a greater outcome later. So I often say these temporary afflictions or these temporary moments, these temporary trials that we're in doesn't define us, but they should refine us to be better. And we're going to have to go at it. So after we've had our venting session, let's come up with some blueprints and let's go forward.
Absolutely. Absolute action. Putting action behind words is so vital, so important.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I want to say, we're almost out of time, but one of the things I want to say is, yes, there is help out there. You know, we pay taxes, so there is money available for us because we pay taxes. We put money into that pot so that when we need it, we can have it to help bail us out of situations. Now, what I want to say is there are resources out there. Now, when you get the resources, utilize them to help empower and strengthen your family. Don't use it to buy a new car or buy a new wardrobe just because you can. Put the money in the bank, put it on the side, because, you know, I have I know a person that applied and got some funding because they had someone living in their house paying rent, and the government paid them because they had someone staying in their house, so they were getting their rent paid. But yet they're doing whatever with the money, you know, instead of saving that money so that when hard times come, they will be able to put money in the pot to pay their rent when they don't have it, pay their car payment if they don't have it. So be wise with the funding that you receive. People manipulated the SBA. Be wise with the funding you receive. People manipulated unemployment. Be wise with the money you receive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Great advice, Dr. Val. Great advice. Because oftentimes, desperation will make you look through a different lens. Mm-hmm. And inside of it, when there are doors that are open, how do we take greatest advantage of those doors? It's not the time to get it now, splurge on, let me get everything I thought I could. No, it's time now to get it and to strategically decide, how am I going to make this a vehicle to continue to reproduce? How do I make it a vehicle that brings about perpetual growth? Rather than, and that's the mindset, going back to your financial literacy. Financial literacy also puts you in a state of mind where you don't live by the notion of, I keep looking at what I got left.
Right.
It's almost as if there's a race to get down to nothing.
Uh-huh.
To look at what can I accumulate? What can I multiply? What can I grow? Uh-huh. And I think we have to take, I think you hit it perfectly, Dr. Val. I mean, we lived through the time of PPPs and SBAs and all these things, disaster loan. And think, and now, for many, what's to show for it? Uh-huh. Or what do I have going forth inside of it? And what we're trying for now is like, can you guys give us another program? Maybe it's an MRP, you know, mortgage release program, or some rental relief. No, we're going to do once that happens. So we have to work smarter, not harder. But it does take just a little bit of time to step back, to reevaluate where we are, see where we need to go. Your advice, as you said, Patricia, was the fact of being able to look at my debt. What can I cut? Yes. What can I trim the fat off of? You know, it might be as small as a cable bill. It could be as small as, it could be as small as a lot of things that may not be a necessity, but if it's going to help me lower my my debt ratio, it's going to work out for me in the long run. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, we want to be positioned to be able to move forward and not shackled with these things in the present.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And some of the families that I work with, when they were looking at homes, we even considered a multifamily. Maybe it wasn't in the ideal neighborhood. Maybe it needed to be fixed up. A lot of the people that I'm dealing with, they have a lot of skills. You know, they're either in, some are in construction or have done this type of work. So I said, consider, yes, it's going to need some, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. But right now, if you're looking that you can make a multifamily work, there you go. You have a source of income now. Besides you taking one floor, you have another floor there for rental, and it becomes an investment. And before you know it, all you need is to build that up with some equity, and then you become more favorable to lenders that you go on to the next property. Eventually, you're going to be working towards having the rent pay for your mortgage so that you can buy something else. But you have
to. Yeah, there's a lot of revitalization programs out there where they're begging people to go into these communities and rehab these homes.
Yes.
So there's resources there for you to, I mean, it's better than being outdoors.
Yes. And it,
you know, and I'm talking because I'm in my home, but I'm saying that there are places here. I'm sitting here talking because I know what it is to be homeless. I was homeless for 3 months. So I know about being homeless. And we stayed in a garage, the four of us, on a queen size mattress on the floor. So I know about being hungry. I know about the struggles and stuff. So sometimes, like Les Brown says, if you can look up, you can get up. So you have to fight and claw your way to success. It's going to be hard. It's going to be rough, but it will be worth it. Mm-hmm. It will be worth it. And if it's to be, it's got to be up to you. You are your greatest resource, regardless of what comes and goes. You are always your greatest resource.
Yes, yes, yes. And you're a testament to that. And that's why I think this is so empowering, because the more people hear your story, Dr. Val, it's so inspiring and it's doable. People tend to get down on themselves and think that they cannot get out of it. But they're in small steps. It does have a destination. It may take whatever time frame, but one step will always lead you closer to that.
Absolutely. We're almost out of time. So, Patricia, if you have any closing remarks and want to give your information again, so individuals that are in your area that want to reach out to you for your services, they can contact you how?
Well, my email is patricia.sampson@kw.com. I am on Facebook as Hudson Valley Realtor for You, the number 4 and the letter U. But you just basically for Facebook, just put the at symbol and discover Hudson Valley. The at symbol, discover Hudson Valley. But if you email me, I'll make sure to send out any information. Right now, what I'm telling my clients and people that, like I said, are looking to our areas because of more affordable housing, I basically let them know that it's a very competitive market, which means that, yes, there might be some very good pricing versus the city, but because of the fact there are many buyers for that same property, it's almost like a bidding war.
So always a bidding war now.
All the more reason you need to have all your ducks in order. So do the research, find someone, a local bank. If you find that you have a relationship with a bank, go first to your local bank. Ask for their advice of how creditworthy you are, how you stack up in regard to making that first plunge into home ownership. If you belong to a union, go to your credit union. That's another great source. Again, go to your library and find out what are sources that I can uncover for assistance with mortgage. They have them. The FHA program, there's other first-time homeowner programs. If you're a vet, someone in the military, the VA obviously has many, many resources that you can access. But like the doctor, Dr. J also shared, the first and foremost is lower that debt in whatever way you can to make yourself more credit worthy. If you pay off even one debt, it shows already this willingness to work on it. And banks, when they see it, they do look at a full story, at least that they should.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Patricia. Then your other Yes, hobby, you said.
My passion is at www.voicelatina.com. I encourage people to visit it and see the stories. There are some phenomenal stories there of people that have come from humble beginnings, and the strides they have made and the accomplishments and the success is just so inspiring that when I was either interviewing these people or writing about them, I was like, oh my gosh, it just gave me this motivation, you know, that, oh my, you know, you want to just get up and do more, because they're stories of overcoming challenges and yet coming through that other side is just so awe-inspiring. www.voicelatina.com.
Thank you so much. Dr. J, you have any closing remarks for us before we leave tonight?
It's been an incredible show. We hope that we've inspired you, encouraged you to recognize the fact that with leverage and knowledge and gaining some financial literacy, we can definitely beat this crisis that we're in. We're not giving up. We're not giving in. We're ready to go in it for the fight. And we're going to get everything that belongs to us, but we must be willing to show up for our own rescue.
Thank you so much. And you can always reach Dr. J and find out more about what he's doing at www.jrthicklin.com. That's jrthicklin.com. And of course, you visit my website, fromthesoulofawareness.com. There are always empowering stories and resources there for you to tap into. And remember, wherever you find yourself in life, you made an appointment to be there. So where are you going? Good night and God bless.